Joe, for the £1 million prize, is the Buxton Index a measure of A, the tweeness of spa towns, B, the quality of mineral water, or C, organisational time horizons?
I'm not sure. Buxton is a spa town, so that sounds like a good answer, but A, maybe B, it's also a mineral water. Not sure, need to think about that a bit.
Oh, sorry, Joe. Sorry. So close, but you're out of time. I just want to thank you. You've been a wonderful contestant.
Out of time? I thought I had at least 30 seconds left.
You clearly don't understand the rules of the game, which are actually pretty arbitrary. Now, on to our next contestant, who is Donald from New York. Welcome to Decision Nerds. I'm Paul Richards.
And I'm Joe Wiggins. In this podcast, we analyse decisions, where they can go wrong, and how we can make them more effectively.
We talk with researchers and industry experts about the art and science of understanding human behaviour.
If you want to understand yourself, your team, or board better, there's something here for you.
So recently, and quite independently, we've been thinking about the issue of timescales and how they play into the relationship between investors, advisors, and clients. So let's say you've just hired a manager and performance isn't materialising. There's always going to be an issue of how long you wait to judge whether you've made the right choice or not. In short, how long do you hold on to the manager before firing them? Joe, you've written recently on how investment edge and timescales interact, and I've also written on an almost unheard of measure called the Buxton Index. So let's start with the issues that you see around timescales, and then we'll move on to the Buxton Index and how it might help.
Yeah, so to start with, I'd like to say I'm very frustrated that you came across the Buxton Index before I did, because I think it's a great and important concept, but I've managed to overcome that, that envy to record this podcast.
Thank you.
So time horizons is an area where I certainly annoy and bore people with in the industry, because I think it's one of the most important and problematic issues that investors face. And generally speaking, I'd say time horizons are becoming ever shorter, which is to the detriment of the vast majority of investors. To try and think about this another way, I wrote a blog or I posed a question saying, let's assume you're asked to bet on the result of a coin flip. So heads or tails, and everyone thought it was an equally weighted coin, but you knew that it was slightly weighted towards landing on heads more often than tails. And then you were asked, over how many flips would you like to make your bet? Would you like to make the bet over 5 flips or 50 flips or 500 flips? Now, as you've got an edge here that nobody else knows about, then you've got a clear advantage, and you want your time horizon or your sample size to be as long as possible, because you want the true odds to play out. Let's say the coin was weighted to land heads up 55% of the time. I want to realize those odds. But if I'm just flipping the coin 5 times, then it'll be very noisy and I might not benefit from the true odds of that situation. And what I was trying to get across really is that if we want the true odds to play out when we're making investment decisions, if indeed we think we have an edge or an advantage, then we need to have an appropriate time horizon. Because what I find is most investors are obsessed with the short run. They're obsessed with what's happened over the last month or the last 3 months or in the last year. And most of that is just random noise. We become entirely beholden to noise and fluctuations of a pretty chaotic, unpredictable system. And that's a problem, because it leads to poor decisions from investors. And over the long run, that can compound into quite poor outcomes.
So in essence, I think the fundamental problem that we're talking about is a timescale mismatch. We can have someone who may be genuinely skilled, but a client might not give enough time for that to play out. And that brings us neatly onto the concept of the Buxton Index. And it really hasn't been heard of. Certainly when I came across it, it didn't even have a Wikipedia entry, which I think in 2024 is the sort of the baseline of reality. I came across it in an old paper from a computer scientist called Ed Dijkstra. And in this, he was talking about the challenges of cooperation between academia and industry. And to highlight this, he introduced the Buxton Index. And the index is named after its professor, John Buxton, who was apparently a bit of a wunderkind, who managed to be respected by the Holy Trinity of not only academia, but also government and corporates. And that's very rare. He was a computer specialist, but by all accounts, a bit of a polymath. So he defined the Buxton index of an entity as the length of time measured in years over which the entity makes its plans. And he gives the example of the little grocery shop around the corner. In that case, it might be 6 months. For the true Christian, he notes it's infinity. And for pretty much everywhere else, it's somewhere in between. He's pretty astute, and he notes that for the average politician who aims at re-election, the Buxton index is around 4 years. And he makes the case that for most industries, the index might be a little bit higher than that, but certainly it's a lot less for managers who have to write quarterly reports. In short, the index captures the planning period of an entity and highlights that within and across entities, different planning horizons create different incentives. And I think we'll return to that point a little bit later on. Now, Dijkstra's point is this. When you try close cooperation between entities with different Buxton indices, things inevitably fail. And he believes this leads to moral complaints about the other party. He notes that the party with a smaller Buxton index, i.e. the shorter planning period, is accused of being superficial and short-sighted, while the party with a larger Buxton index is accused of neglect of duty, freewheeling, etc. In addition, he notes that each party accuses the other one of being stupid. Now, this was talking about academia and business, where academics certainly used to have a longer-term perspective. But I think we can see really clearly how this might map onto the relationship between an investment firm and its clients, specifically the time horizon that you're given to generate performance. Now, I think most clients and advisors understand that targets will rarely be hit in a linear fashion, but the majority of them would like to get paid consistently without the discomfort of underperforming the broad market or peers. And I think here's the nub of it, that people often only find out their true capacity for discomfort and perhaps their true Buxton index when they're experiencing pain. And I think, as we've both spoken about quite a lot before, badly managed pain shortens planning horizons and generates a range of predictable outcomes. So I like the Buxton index because it gives a simple name to an intuitive idea that time mismatches hurt. But I think in the investment context, the type of things that we speak about, there are a lot of things where we can go into a little bit more detail, maybe the payout profile of managers, how clients and advisors think about performance. And I think a nice way to structure this is thinking about the three parties that are generally involved. There's a client, usually some form of advisor, and the manager. And I think there's also three specific time periods to consider: before the hiring of a manager, during the difficult performance period, and what happens afterwards. So I think if we look at that interaction between the party and the time period, we can tease out some of these issues in a way that's useful for the audience. So first of all, let's think about the client. Joe, from your perspective, anything that they should really be thinking about before making an investment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Critical for a client to consider what their genuine time horizon is, or what we might call the Buxton index in the context of this conversation. And by time horizon, I don't mean the ultimate end goal for your investment. Time horizon is about how long could you withstand difficult spells of performance. And I think when we are in a cold state, so when we are thinking ahead about going through difficult spells of performance but not actually experiencing it, that number is far, far longer than it actually is when we're in a hot state and we're going through difficult periods of performance and the stress and anxiety of that. And one thing I always say to investors and to clients thinking about whether to invest actively or whether to invest passively is, if you do not have the tolerance for sustained underperformance from an investment strategy, and that might be years for any given active investment strategy, then you should just take a passive approach. There is no point investing in an active strategy, even if you believe you found one with an edge, if you know that, or you expect that through periods of difficult performance, you're likely to abandon it. And we see this all the time with all types of investors, is that as soon as an investment goes through an inevitably bad spell, then what they want to do is sell out of that strategy, abandon that strategy, and move into something which is more in vogue, which has better short run return. So understanding your ability to tolerate difficult periods and difficult time periods of performance is really important. And as I always say, with any active strategy, you will go through multiple years of underperformance. It's almost inevitable. From Warren Buffett downwards, that is the case in terms of relative performance compared to some benchmarks. So if you want to take those types of decisions, then your behavioral tolerance needs to be appropriate, and your Buxton index needs to be matched with the actual investment that you are making. As if there's a mismatch between those two things, it's going to lead to poor decisions made at poor times and probably repeated consistently throughout an overall investment horizon as well. So understanding your own tolerance and setting your expectations correctly is really important.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think a very simple question that clients can ask themselves, or perhaps the advisor could, is, have you actually experienced this before? Have you actually had to deal with those difficulties? Because as you say, our ability to predict what our hot state performance is going to be is often not very good. And if people actually haven't done that, whether that's an individual or a board, then I think that's a really nice jumping off point for either some behavioral training or just a deeper discussion to say, this is what other people have experienced. Does that change your preferences in any way?
And I think it's fine for anyone, whether that's a client or advisor or board or a committee or a firm, to say, actually, we don't have the tolerance for poor performance or underperformance over a 6-month period or a 1-year period or a 3-year period. I think that's fine to acknowledge that, but then make sure your investment decisions are consistent with that. Like the worst case scenario is you never really address what your genuine time horizon is, but it's implicit in your decision making, and then you make investment decisions that are wildly inconsistent with that. And I was unfortunately doom scrolling Twitter or X the other day, and someone posed a question, I'm not sure who, I can't remember now, about how long should you give an active fund manager when they are underperforming the index before you fire them. And most of the replies were around, why would you give any more time than 1 year? Which I just thought was incredible, because if that's genuinely your view, then the absolute last thing you should be doing is investing in active strategies. You should be investing as close to the index and as passively as possible, because, as I've said, you will inevitably underperform over those time horizons with any strategy you use. And if you're going to sell after those periods and rinse and repeat that behavior through time, you're going to have really bad outcomes. So it's worrying, but I do think, as I said earlier in the conversation, I think time horizons across the piece are becoming shorter and shorter, which creates opportunities, I think, for those with the ability to extend their horizon and to create a decision-making environment where they can make genuinely long-term decisions and stick with them. But I think the number of places that you can do that, and the number of people who are able to do that is unfortunately reducing.
I think that makes perfect sense. So now let's turn to the time period when the difficult performance is actually happening. And I think one of the things that I'd like to start with is that sometimes we don't either want to or feel the need to repeat things that we've actually said before. But clearly, it could be a year, 18 months, 2 years before when you've had this discussion about hot or cold state decision making. But if you're going through that period, actually, people are going to be, in all likelihood, or certainly some people are going to be in a degree of emotional distress about what's going on. So it is important that we keep on talking about, here are the emotional pressures at play. And again, we've spoken about this in the context of regret and failure. I won't repeat all the points that we've made in previous pods on this, but I'll put a link in the show notes so people can access them easily. But I do think it's important for people to be able to talk about what they're really feeling. My experience has been that when people are sitting around in a group, they're more happy to harumph about performance being bad than actually talking about the fear that they're actually feeling. But it's actually going to be things like regret and fear that are driving their behavior. And finding a way to talk about that openly is the best way of allowing a third party, whether that's another board member or perhaps an advisor, to come in and say, okay, if you're feeling this, then this is a good way to think about it. If we're not saying what we're really thinking, then we're depriving ourselves of getting to the best solution.
Yeah, and it's an interesting question, is to think why people possess those short horizons. And there's a multitude of reasons why that might be. It might just be their incentives are aligned with short horizons. It might just be how we're wired from an evolutionary perspective to worry a lot about the short term. It might be the environment that we're in or how we're behaving. If we're checking financial markets every day and poring over news flow on a day-to-day basis, that might be shortening the Buxton index that we believe we have. So there are a huge range of factors that contribute to us having a short horizon and being incredibly sensitive to disappointing short run outcomes. And it would be valuable, I think, if people would talk more about what are those genuine reasons as to why you think like that and why you make decisions on that basis.
So the time has now passed. The manager has potentially been sacked. Is there anything that we should be thinking about?
So it should be seen as a lesson. And I think we'll tend to view it as a lesson in how not to invest in certain, or why not to invest in certain managers with certain traits or certain strategies. And we'll think about the specifics. We'll attribute the fault to the manager or the team that we're invested in. We'll tend not to reflect on our own behavior, our own decisions over the piece with that strategy. And what we should be doing is, are there lessons to be learned about my own decision making, and should that impact the future decisions that I make? So it might be that we invest with a manager, we think we've got a long horizon, it goes through a period of poor short run returns, and we capitulate and abandon that strategy. And our instinct will be to say, well, that manager has done things that we did not expect, and therefore we're making a change because it's behaving out of line with our expectations. And what might be the case is we greatly overestimated our time horizon and our ability to withstand such periods. That second point is the most important, because that should frame how you make decisions in the future. If you understand the types of decisions that you want to make, either you need to make different types of decisions. So let's say you invest less actively because you can't cope with the fluctuations that you might see from an active strategy, or you change your decision-making environment, the backdrop around which you make your decisions, to try and more align your own time horizon with the required time horizon of a strategy. And those should be the two things that we think about, and think less about why did this manager not behave as I expected them to behave? Did they do something wrong? Think about our own reaction and how we can improve our decision-making around that in the future.
And as we've discussed several times before, as humans, we're absolutely terrible at doing that. There's just a range of emotions where something has gone wrong that means for many of us, if not all of us, will have the tendency to want to look away from that. So I think that the first point is that just to recognize it is difficult to do, but it shouldn't be, because often, as we touched on in the failure podcast, these are a complex range of issues that have come together to create a novel scenario that we couldn't have easily predicted. We shouldn't look away from it. We should try and learn, but we should recognize that everybody will perhaps want to actually kind of skip past things and get on to the next thing. But something that I think that is important to understand when we're starting to look to make that next investment is that people will potentially feel bruised from a underperforming scenario, and that may lead them down a path where they will choose something that may be lower risk than they need to actually have. They will go for what they think is the safe option. Now, to your point earlier on, if the safe option is perhaps the only thing they can tolerate, then that might be the right choice for them to actually make. But it's just a point to note, particularly for advisors who are listening to this, that will be a general tendency there. And it's the role of people to help, I think, get people past some of these hot issues so they can make the best long-term decision for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And that speaks to the idea of myopic loss aversion. And let's say you have a client who's got a 30-year, 40-year horizon for their pension investments, and you think they should be investing in a relatively high-risk fashion in higher return assets like equities, but their behavioral tolerance for volatility is low. So two options there. One is you invest in lower risk assets, which are more suited to their own behavioral makeup and their likely decision making over time. Or you go through a process of thinking about educating the client, but also thinking about how do we create a decision-making environment that encourages long-term thinking and can reduce some of the sensitivities to investing in higher risk, more volatile assets through time. So the environment in which we make decisions is incredibly important. And for clients, it can be as simple as saying, don't check your portfolio all the time, only check your portfolio once every 6 months or once every year, and reduce that stress of being buffeted by the short-term fluctuations in value. So we can invest in line with what we think our psychological tolerance for risk is, or we can try and create an environment where we can invest in a fashion that's more consistent with our long-run objectives.
So now let's move on to advisors and think about what it might be useful for them to do before any difficult performance period. A starting point, which I think many advisors do now, is to have a really clear thesis on how the manager adds value. I think what can be less clear is the timescale over which they expect the performance to be delivered. There's some clear technical challenges here. It's impossible to predict with any certainty when returns might actually come through. But I think there are some useful things that you can say about the lumpiness of the payout profile, whether there's any particular macroeconomic environments that you expect will help or hurt what you do. Joe, any useful statistics that you use with clients in that regard?
One thing we always try to talk about is how the likely range of outcomes will narrow as your time horizon increases. So if you take equity market returns, for example, if you look over a short run horizon, so over 1 year periods, the range of outcomes from equity markets through time is incredibly wide. You're talking plus 50%, minus 50%. So a huge range of outcomes, and outcomes which are largely unpredictable. But as your time horizon increases, because of the impact of the compounding fundamental returns from equities, then your range of outcomes narrows significantly. So through that lens, the risk in terms of the uncertainty and the width of the range of outcomes is greater on a short run horizon than it is on a long run horizon. So thinking about things and how does changing the time horizon affect the outcomes is incredibly important. But you are right that for an advisor, it's incredibly important for them to communicate what the likely experience will be in owning a strategy and over what time horizons the strategy is likely to fare well and what time horizons are likely to be meaningful. And this is not a precise science, but even presenting some sensible expectations for that type of factor, it can be valuable in making sure that the client understands what they're investing into and understand what the challenges of investing in that type of strategy will be.
I think an important point that we should recognize is that if we are investing in strategies where we might have to wait a long time for the payoff, it's really asking the question about what's the advisor's role in this process. There will be periods where people just want to fold and find a new manager. And the interesting question here is it the role of the advisor to keep the client happy or to be that behavioral bulwark that actually keeps on bringing them back to the long term? It's a very difficult and narrow path to walk. I'm sure this is something that you've spoken to people about over the years or may have felt yourself from time to time.
Yeah, it's a hugely difficult challenge, and setting expectations with the client from the outset is really important. So when you go through those difficult periods, you can remind them of the fact that this was in line with expectations for the strategy. So we went into it with eyes open. The surprise scale of and magnitude of underperformance can be incredibly difficult to deal with and often leads to incredibly poor decision making. But it is a challenge for the advisor as well, because on the one hand, they need to ensure that the client is making decisions that are aligned with the objectives of the strategy and the reasonable expectations for the strategy. On the other hand, the advisor is also trying to assess whether the strategy is still valid and is still being managed in line with their initial hypothesis or thesis for why that strategy would work through time. And you don't want to be stuck in a situation where you're simply saying, don't worry, everything's fine, as long as you wait for 10 more years, this will pan out, this will pan out okay. So you're always juggling. On the one hand, you want your client to be patient, and on the other hand, you will need to make prudent, sensible, evidence-based decisions about the investment as well. And sometimes there will be short-term poor performance, and there will be something going wrong with the strategy, which will mean you need to change your view. So it's not simply a case of always, as long as you wait long enough, things will be fine. It's also a situation of understanding when are things going wrong that's just the price of playing the game and just a part of investing in that type of strategy, and when are things going wrong because something is fundamentally broken. And that's a really difficult balancing act for any advisor to have to deal with. The other thing that's really important to note is that advisors are obviously not immune to the same issues faced by their client in terms of myopia, in terms of a shorter Buxton index than might otherwise be the case. And also that they're under maybe more pressure than the client, because it'll be pressure about their job, about their incentives, about their career, about their reputation. And although I consider myself to be a long-term investor, and when people ask me for my horizon, I always think in my head 10 years, and I never say that because people think I'm a lunatic, but I still feel incredible pressure about the short term, and does it affect how I feel, and does it affect my assessment of things, and does it affect my behavior, what's going on in the short run? It absolutely does, and that's inescapable. So the advisor is under all sorts of pressure as well. So you're trying to encourage the right type of thinking from your client whilst you're experiencing similar pressure, albeit in slightly different ways as well. And that's a really tough challenge.
And I think that is a brilliant segue into what should happen afterwards, because advisors are not immune from all the challenges of looking into what happened and why. I think the interesting thing here is that I think most good research organizations will do some form of debrief about this. I guess there's the issue of how and what you show the client. But I'd certainly hope with most research organizations, there is a very strong desire and incentive to actually go through that process. Any thoughts on that? I mean, we have spoken about this fairly exhaustively.
A couple of quick points on that. One is, I think organizations or investment teams are probably quite poor at reflecting on the real reasons that something went wrong. So they might do a post-mortem, but the post-mortem, as we've talked about many times, will attribute the failings somewhere else rather than on the individual or on the dynamics of the team or the process that they're running. So it's very easy to do a post-mortem. It's very difficult to do a post-mortem that genuinely gets to the cause of the issues of why things have gone wrong. So that is inevitably a challenge. And the other problem is, particularly when you're taking a long run horizon, if you think you have an edge in making long term decisions, you won't have a huge sample of decisions by definition to assess whether you're right or wrong, because you want your decisions to span out over numerous years. So if you're taking a high frequency approach, then it's easy to work out that what you're doing probably doesn't work because you get lots of evidence to tell you those decisions you're making are not adding value. But if you're trying to extend your horizon, then you might have a relative handful of meaningful decisions that you make over a career. So it's quite hard to assess accurately with that type of sample size. So a lot of it comes down to your beliefs and your broader evidence base about those types of decisions, rather than it being able to assess a large enough number of your own decisions to generate confidence in it.
We've both been in the game for quite a long period of time now, but obviously started off as junior analysts. It's even harder for them simply because they have less experience of markets making those kind of calls. Anything that we should be doing to actually help them get up the curve more quickly?
So I think the most important thing, I think, for a junior analyst is to focus on process rather than outcomes. So think about and encourage them based on the quality of thought, the amount of curiosity they have, and thinking that goes into how they're making decisions, rather than trying to judge the outcomes of their initial investment decisions or their first set of recommendations, because it will inevitably be noisy, and it will focus us probably more on things that are far too short term. So try to value the right things, try to value the disciplines and processes that you think will lead to good behaviors in the medium term, rather than worrying too much about whether their initial set of decisions has added value over the past 6 months or past year.
I think I'd add to that, again, coming back to the emotional side of it. I loved what I did when I was a junior analyst. I was hugely impassioned about it and distraught, frankly, by the idea that the calls that I'd make were going to go wrong. And I absolutely wasn't at that point in time sort of parameterizing very well how many calls I should actually be getting right. It's a tough game that investors play, as you've alluded to sort of Buffett there. Buffett has made plenty of mistakes. As a junior analyst, you're going to be making mistakes. The important thing is that you have a deep commitment to actually learn from them. And hopefully the leaders who are supporting the analysts are actually reinforcing that point to them that they've been there, they've had tough times, they've had learning experiences as well. And it's just part of playing the game. And the key part of playing the game is staying in the game and going forward.
I think it's incredibly powerful to sit down with junior analysts and talk about things that you've got wrong, why you've got them wrong, both because they can learn from the mistakes that you've made, but also just to understand that more senior people, more experienced people around them are fallible. And what we're trying to do is incredibly difficult. And in many cases, the probabilities of success are not particularly high. And making them comfortable in that environment and creating the safety around how they work and how they make decisions feels really important.
Okay, so I think we're seeing some patterns coming out in these discussions here. So this last one will probably be a slightly shorter discussion. Let's think about what an investor should be doing ahead of the events. As we touched on, I think it is really important for people to have some kind of narrative about how they expect the performance path to unfold. As I said, whether that's in terms of how lumpy they expect it to be or broad drivers of it. And some idea of how that might come through into the amount of time you need to be judged fairly. The point that I make to managers when I'm talking to them, if you can't do that, something is going to be enforced on top of you. The second key point is it's absolutely crucial to keep on reinforcing this during the good times, because when you get to that period of difficult performance, the client may just see you rationalizing a difficult period to save your skin.
Yeah, it's incredibly challenging. And what you don't see enough of from fund managers is them saying, if you invest in my strategy, then it is likely you will experience periods of underperformance that might last 3 years, might last 5 years. We could be 25% behind our benchmark, and understand why they don't do that, because it's not a fantastic sales message. But it will probably attract the right type of clients who have the tolerance to stay invested in your strategy for the long term, if you do express in an open fashion what the realities of your strategy are. And if you don't talk about it, either you're wildly overconfident in the realities of your strategy, which is a concern in itself, or you're just withholding something because you think it might put people off investing in the strategy, which I get, but might have short-term benefits and long-term or medium-term costs. So it's a real challenge for managers. And the other issue is that what is the period or the time at which a manager will have the most demand for their strategy? It will be when they've gone through a period of unusually strong performance. And I would say that the probability of them underperforming from that point becomes pretty high as well. So the time at which there is most demand for their strategy is the time at which there's likely to be significant disappointment, at least in the medium term, for investors new to that strategy. So it creates all sorts of problematic behaviors and decision-making challenges. But the more open and honest a manager can be, even though his employer may not want them to be as open and honest about it, the more likely it is to have a stable base of clients who, from a Buxton index perspective, are aligned with the behavior of the manager, the outcomes relative to expectations.
The point that Dykstra made on this is that you can have different Buxton indices within any given organization. He makes the point in his letter that it's between the managers doing quarterly reports and maybe the CEO. But yeah, I've spent a decent chunk of my career in investment management. I think it's perfectly fair to say there can be a different Buxton index between, say, sales and marketing and the CEO and a CIO or an investment leader in any given context.
Yeah, so if you're investing in funds or investing in managers, a really useful and important thing to do is take this Buxton index idea and think about what is the Buxton index of the manager or the strategy. So what is the time horizon being adopted by the manager over which they think there's a fair chance of the strategy working or adding value, and then compare that to the perceived Buxton index of the company, the asset manager that they they work for. And that sounds like an odd thing to say, but oftentimes, particularly if you have a listed asset manager, the time horizons of that firm will be incredibly short. It will be about generating flows over the next 3 months, over the next reporting period, maybe over the next year if you're lucky. If your manager's saying, well, you need 7 years for this strategy to get the odds on its side, and my employer has a horizon of about a year, you've got a real problem there. And you've got an issue which will probably be a prelude to that manager being removed from that company, because they'll go through periods of underperformance, they'll lose assets, and because the employer has a much shorter horizon than the manager does, they'll be sensitive to that, and they'll look to move on. So is there consistency with the manager's approach and the environment in which they're operating in, and the incentives of that environment?
Yeah, and as we've said so many times before, designing good incentives is 99% of the solution. I think there are a couple of things, having been on both sides of the fence, that it is important for managers to be doing in this scenario. First one is showing a little bit of humility and thoughtfulness, not simply steamrolling through this point of course you signed up for this, it's just a natural reaction, even if maybe that's what they're thinking. In the context of their own portfolio, their investors, they can deal with that. They may be saying to themselves, look, you've simply got to tough this out. Actually showing some humility and thoughtfulness about how you've checked your thinking to make sure it's not wrong is generally very good. A second point I want to make is that people should try and explain what they're doing clearly. When they're nervous, they can default to complexity. Don't do that. It never helps. A third point is that if you've got skin in the game, show it. If you're investing in the strategy, I don't think it hurts to say that you're feeling it with the client. Of course, you need to do this in the right way, not come into a meeting and say, it's terrible. My net worth is down 30 million. I feel your pain. That's unlikely to go down well with many clients. Any tips from you, Joe?
No, I totally agree with what you said. I think it's really important, even if you do have a long horizon, not to just throw your hands up and say, of course, everyone should buy into my long horizon. You need to help people understand the realities of your investing approach, and they will feel challenged, appreciate, they will feel anxious, worried that they've made a poor decision. So managers need to lean into that and to support their investors through the more difficult periods.
Now, I think we spent a lot of time talking about what people should do afterwards. And I think all of these points hold exactly true for investors. So I don't think we'll repeat ourselves there. Any last points you'd like to finish on?
All I would say is that understanding your own time horizons and the time horizons of the people who you're making investment decisions for, or understanding the time horizons of the people you're investing with, is absolutely critical. And if there's a significant misalignment between those two things, it's a recipe for poor decisions and unsatisfying investment outcomes. So it's a really important thing to think about.
You're right. It's a really important thing to think about, but it's also an important thing to talk about. And I think the Buxton Index can help make that happen. It's such a simple and powerful idea. If everyone knew about it and the behavioral factors that changed it, then I think we'd be having better discussions and better decisions.